like, these people, I mean, if they were such great actors, would they not be getting acting roles? Like, that's how I always felt. I was like, in my real life conversations, I'm always like the number one defender of like stan Twitter, like specifically BTS stans, role model. I'm like, how can you be expected to be a role model at 15 years old?
This week on the Venus Undefined podcast, we are happy to be in conversation with Mila Tequila, best known for her YouTube, in which she posts deep dive videos about the early 2000s, correcting misconceptions and adding nuance to infamous female celebrities of the time. During our conversation, we discussed her inspiration for creating the channel, her video making process, the early 2000s, as well as chatting about fame, the internet, and entertainment. Listen to the episode. Please go to the Venus Undefined podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcast, and Spotify.
So I'm Mila Tequila. I consider myself a pop culture historian of sorts. I make videos about early, mid, late 2000s content and media. And the goal of my channel is to kind of give nuance to situations that I feel like tabloids or, you know, media didn't really give nuance to at all.
Yeah. Okay, so then I've been doing this thing in interviews now where I ask people to set the record straight on things that relates to the interview. So I have like five words, and so you kind of just, I'll give you the word, and then you can kind of maybe give a definition or what it actually is in comparison to what people think it is. So the five words are reality TV, parasocial relationships, scandal, stan culture, and then what is Y2K? So whichever one you want to start with.
Okay. Those are good. Oh, wait, what was the first one again?
Reality TV.
Okay. Okay, reality TV. I think when people talk about reality TV, I feel like there's a lot of brushing off with like, oh, it's scripted, oh, it's whatever. But it's like most of the people, like, okay, for The Hills, for example, like these people, I mean, if they were such great actors, would they not be getting acting roles? Like, that's how I always felt. I was like, well, you know, if Spencer and Heidi are such great actors, like, if that was true rage he was showing. So I'm like, he needs to go be in some auditions or something. And I think there's a lot of like brushing it off as it's scripted. But at the same time, it obviously is highly edited. So I always, like, I reference that episode of Victorious a lot, where they filmed her talking on the phone to a dog, and they filmed Beck on the phone with, I don't remember who it was, but like a child or something. And then they stitched it together and made it look like they were having like a romantic phone call. And I'm like, it's obviously all like that. So, but I also think that most reality stars kind of know what they're getting into when they do that. So I feel like they kind of want you to take it at face value. And I feel like if people don't, as long as, which this kind of goes into parasocial relationships, as long as you aren't like truly basing your opinions of people or like, you know, taking all of that to heart, like, I don't think it's that harmful. It's entertainment at the end of the day.
Yeah. Okay. Then the next four are parasocial relationships, scandal, stan culture, or Y2K. You can do them out of order if you want.
Okay. Okay. Stan culture. See, this is another very nuanced thing that I think discussions of it lack a lot of nuance. Because, you know, when people think stans, instantly what you're thinking is like those mean accounts that, you know, use a celebrity profile picture and they're just attacking everyone. And, you know, in what I normally think is like, that celebrity would probably hate you. Like, they would probably see you and be so embarrassed. And, you know, truly most of the time, those people aren't even really big fans of the person that they're hiding behind. I feel like, because I was in like an early iteration of Stan Twitter when I was a really big fan of One Direction. And so that we would see stuff like that all the time, when we would always be like, oh my God, like they're making us look so bad. Like we, that is not even like a real account. Like they, we don't, no one knows them. Like, and we would all be like fighting to defend ourselves. And I feel like I see that a lot still with Stan Twitter. And I always am like, in my real life conversations, I'm always like the number one defender of like Stan Twitter, like specifically BTS stans, like people, and like in conversation in real life, people love to hate on like K-pop fans or like BTS fans on Twitter. Like they always do. And I'm like, calm down, calm down, calm down. Like I always am like in real life, like I'm always fighting for them. And cause I don't know. I feel like they get a lot of flack, but I think it's like a fun place for community that a lot of people don't get to have in real life. Especially with, you know, cause stuff like K-pop, when you have in real life conversations, people are like making fun of people. So it's like, I can obviously see why that space would be so important to people online. So, but I also can see it does become toxic when it's like jumping to defend someone's every move. And it's like, that person doesn't know you personally. We need to calm down, collect yourself. It's going to be okay. And I think, I don't know. I think that people put a lot of their, like, they put their whole soul into stanning someone, and then it turns into their whole world. And so when someone is attacking their favorite artist or whoever, it's like a personal attack. And so I feel like people put a lot of energy into it. And these are like, usually people I feel like that are doing that, are they're gonna forget about even doing that in a couple of years. Like it's not even that important to them when they're fighting for this artist. And it's so, just like a momentary thing.
Speaking of that, the next word that kind of flows with this is parasocial relationships.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think especially on Stan Twitter, and I feel like a lot on YouTube, especially because it's that longer format, and you know, maybe with like vloggers and stuff, like an Emma Chamberlain type person who people feel like they see this person's every move, like you feel like you know them. And I know that I've been guilty of like, I've never been like a big commenter on YouTube. So, you know, I don't like leave my breadcrumbs of like a parasocial relationship, but I am guilty of like watching stuff and I feel like I know this person. Like, so I'll be in conversation with someone and they'll bring up something. I'll be like, I feel like I heard a story from one of my friends about that. And then I realized that it was a YouTube video that I watched. I'm like, that is so embarrassing. But like, I have been guilty of, you know, just like, it's cause you feel, when you make like a comforting space on the internet that like you always go to, and it just becomes something that's so routine and you feel like that's a part of your life and they, you know, by proxy are a part of your life. And so I can see how it happens, but obviously it's, I think when it becomes a problem is really vocalized, I guess, like once you're posting about it, and because I feel like I'm thinking from the perspective of the person who you're having the parasocial relationship with. Like, I can imagine that if I was like commenting on a creator who I had a parasocial relationship's videos, like they would be creeped out and that would be weird. But, you know, it can be dangerous for the person in the parasocial relationship as well, with, you know, idolizing someone that you ultimately don't know. Everything you watch is highly edited and, you know, made to fit a certain thing. Like, people don't show who they really are on the internet. And, you know, so if you're idolizing this person, and then you're going to be let down most likely.
Okay. You have two words left, scandal and Y2K.
Scandal. And when we're thinking Y2K, are we thinking like aesthetically or just like time period wise?
Kind of like a mix of both.
Okay. Let's do Y2K first. Okay. So I think Y2K, as in like the early 2000s in general, I think obviously right now the reason that it's so popular is because people our age are growing up, and it's the same thing with when the millennials got older and everything was about the 90s, and now everything is, you know, becoming about the 2000s, because it's just people our age who grew up in the 2000s and now getting older and wanting that nostalgia. and the 20-year trend cycle, obviously. I think it's another really nuanced thing, I guess. Obviously, there's a lot of what was considered like beauty standards and like what was comedy then, and like pretty much everything about every piece of media, like watching anything from that time period, you'll almost always be disappointed. And like a lot of that is, you know, and it has aged poorly and it's not, you know, that fun to look back on. But I think there's still, I think there's something that people are finding special about being able to go back into that time period and kind of like set the record straight and make, you know, try to reimagine, like, I guess what I was trying to do with like Lindsay Lohan or Amanda Bynes or Britney Spears, like trying to go back and like, you know, taking the power out of like the wrong person's hands in those stories.
Yeah. And then lastly, Scandal. And then we're going to get to like questions and topics. I think I may just change Scandal to Tabloid.
Tabloid,
like, a lot of people don't know what that is.
Okay. Oh, okay, okay. Tabloid is, you know, those, what do they call them? Like a gossip rag. Those, like Your People, Your Okay, Your Us Weekly. And these are, you know, a kind of like Perez Hilton type on paper, which I feel like they all shat on Perez Hilton for so long and like kind of, but it's like they do pretty much the same thing, except I guess they put a more professional spin on it. Instead of, you know, drawing on pictures and making fun of someone for an eating disorder with like a nickname, they'll just like put them on the cover and be like, ooh, really skinny. And I think a lot of, I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I think it's interesting to look at early 2000s, People Magazine, Us Weekly, whatever. If you look at them, they're pretty much all making fun of someone for gaining weight. And then later in the 2000s, they're making fun of people for being too thin. And I think it's interesting because it's like the people who are reading it, you know, it's like there became this countercultural, I guess, thing against like the Paris Hilton types that were like being really thin. And so people like Pink, you know, making fun of them in her music video, Stupid Girls, with the people purging in the bathroom stalls. And it's, so it became this kind of thing to be like, I'm not like those girls, like I don't need to throw up to feel beautiful, like
that's the
and
thing.
So it's that really, became like empowering for one.
It's interesting because Pink is also thin.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
it was interesting in this change in like beauty standards where it wasn't really, oh, we don't think thinness is the pinnacle. It's, well, you just need to be naturally thin. We don't want people who are, you know, developing eating disorders to be thin, but it's like, but you created a culture that did
that. Yeah. It's like, love yourself, but like, all just like go to the gym and do it.
Yeah. Don't, don't be too destructive. What's the main inspiration to starting your channel? And how do you like do all this research? Because you're talking about sometimes maybe 10 years of stuff and very hard things that a lot of people, it's not really easy to find. So why did you start this channel? And like, how is your process of making videos? How do you pick topics and, you know, film and record and all this stuff? It's so interesting.
It really started, I tell this story all the time. I was gonna make a Google Doc with one of my friends about like the Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton situation, because I was always dying to know. And I was like, I'm gonna research it. I'm just gonna make us a Google Doc and it's gonna be like a story for us to read. And so we can both just know what happened. It was just gonna be like a fun little thing. And so I was on like, you know, I listened to a few podcasts like Le Do You Remember This? And there was a Tumblr blog, Pop Culture Died in 2009, that I was, you know, just like they really were a huge inspiration for me when I started my channel, just like the way that they were able to dig up stuff. And I was just like so fascinated by like, because they have like, truly they do so much more than I could ever do. They have like, you know, connections that can get them archival footage and stuff. And I was just really fascinated by like their deep dives that they would do. And so I was like, you know, I made the Google Doc and I went on YouTube to look for more stuff and there was no video about it. So I was like, any smart businesswoman would fill the gap. So I guess I just made the video. I made it in, it was like 3 months of research that went into that Google Doc. And then I made the video really fast and edited it. And I posted it and I put a thing about it on TikTok, and it kind of just like took off, like the very first one, and I was really surprised, and then I just kept doing it, I guess.
So why the name Mila Tequila? Because a lot of people do know who the like actual Mila Tequila is, and she is a very interesting character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I actually had not researched what Tila Tequila was up to whenever I had made the channel. I was sitting there, I had the video edited, and I had the channel header and like the profile picture, and I was sitting there and I was like, a name. And I knew I didn't want to make it like my government name. Oh, are you filming this part? Have you filmed anything yet?
Yeah. I can crop out where it's
in. My government name. I keep forgetting to change it. I can change it now if you still need to get.
Okay. No harm.
Okay. I lost my train of thought. Oh, God damn it. Oh yeah. Okay. I hadn't looked up what she was up to when I made the channel. I had just, you know, come across her when looking at old MySpace stuff. And, I was like, that's a fun name, and I haven't heard anyone talk about her in a long time, so I figure it's time for a revamp. And after I made the channel, after like the first two videos, I was like, what's she up to? And I went and looked it up, and I was absolutely shocked and horrified to see everything that she was up to. Some really disturbing things. So I had like convened with some of my creator friends. I was like, what do you guys think? Like, do you think that this is a bad look, or do you think I can like do a re-owning it type thing?
It's too late. It's iconic now.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, you just kind of go with it. I think people won't think that you're like being pro Tila Tequila by having the name.
So how much research do you do for all your videos? Cause you don't make like every day I make a new video. Like some people like yours, there's like your last video was about 5 months ago. So
yeah.
Do those breaks allow you to take time to research?
Yeah, pretty much most of what my video time always consists of is research and me looking up stuff and taking notes and trying to compile it all and then writing the script and trying to make it sound good. And then filming and editing really is like the fastest part for me. And well, except for when I have to film 5 times over and over. But I feel like the research is also kind of the most fun part for me, but it can get draining when I'm like, I wake up in the morning and I sit at the computer all day staring at one thing. And then like when I lay down in bed at night, all I can think of is the thing that I've been looking at on the computer all day. And, because another reason why my videos take so long is because sometimes I just can't come up with anything that's inspiring to me. And I feel like what's important about my videos is that I actually care about what I'm talking about. And I feel like that is just, to me, I feel like it wouldn't even come out as well because I've gotten to the point where I've made a video. I've gotten to the point where I'm sitting down to film and I'm like, I don't care about this anymore. And I film it and I watch it back and I'm like, it sucks. And I just don't post it. Cause I'm like, I can't post it. Cause I obviously don't care. Like, why would anyone else care? And it's like, you know, people still might like the video, but I don't know. I don't want to post something that I don't even care about, because if I'm insecure about the video and then someone says something bad about it, then it's going to be all worse.
That kind of leads me to another question is, do you think that with, instead of, what's it called? Reality television, we now have people kind of creating their own independent reality television, mm-hmm. and like being influencers and stuff like that. And we see essentially now, a lot of this has focused away from adults or young adults and maybe like 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds to little kids, like with mm-hmm. the Ace family, with the LeBrant family, with all of these family channels. Do you think that that is harmful? Do you think it's going to lead to some impact? And do you think that it's making the kids, what's the word? I don't want to say celebrity, but it's like a person. A public persona.
Public figure, yeah.
Hey guys, just wanted to jump in here. The next part of the interview is probably going to sound non-continuous and very inconsistent. You may be confused, but the reason why that is I forgot to record our Zoom, because that's how I film these over Zoom. I forgot to record the second part
because you only get 40 minutes, and obviously this is going to take more than 40 minutes. I forgot to record, so therefore all of our conversation didn't get saved, so we had to meet up again and have another conversation, which was amazing, and I had no problem doing that. The more conversation with Mila Tequila, the better. But yeah, so this is the rest of it, and I hope you guys still enjoy it and it doesn't sound absolutely terrible. Okay, bye. Here you go.
Well, we left off because I forgot to record the other part of it, discussing, I'm pretty sure, how like family channels and how that relates to making your child a public figure since birth. So you were like in the middle of talking about this. You can just, I guess, finish with that.
I'm trying to think of what I already said, so I don't repeat stuff I already said. This just goes back to the same thing with parasocial relationships, where I feel like part of the reason why like people like Brittany and Lindsay and Amanda Bynes were so, you know, respected and, you know, people looked down on them so much as they grew up is because they felt like they had that access to them as a child. So it's like they feel like part of your family and you feel like you can give them input on their life or whatever you may be feeling. And I feel like that kind of, I mean, I have guess we haven't really had the chance to see what the outcomes are of a family channel, but I would not be surprised to find if it were the same type of situation.
Do you think that, like with child stars, the parents who obviously are the managers and also themselves become public figures do things at the expense of their child in order to get like residual fame or to live vicariously through their kid?
I mean, I would have to assume so. Like when you think about like things like the Ace family, and most of their audience, if I'm not mistaken, are younger kids or like tweens probably at the oldest. And I feel like without the kids, because that's kind of what the kids are watching for. Like if there's one thing I know from working with like that middle age of kids from like 8 to 11 is that they love little kids. Like they it makes them feel so much older. They're like, oh, you're so precious. I'm like, you're both babies. And I feel like without the kids, it wouldn't have, you know, half of what their audience is there for. So it's like they wouldn't be there just to be watching Austin and Catherine.
We talked about how people feel like entitled to celebrities, especially through people who are growing up and have been in the public eye for a long time. Do you think that especially in the early 2000s with the Disney kids and Nickelodeon kids and all of them, there was this like obsession with them saying they're going to remain virgins, which when we look back on it, that's so weird that you would ask a child, are you having sex?
Yeah. Like, and I don't know what like they expect the answer to be, because there's really only one acceptable answer you can give, which is yes, right? Like that's the only answer that anyone will be happy with. If you say no, then you're like a whore. If you like don't want to answer, then people will just take that as a no. Like and there's really no answer you can give but to just say yes, which is either true and an invasion of privacy or a lie and an invasion of privacy. And it's just so weird. Like it's just a very bizarre thing.
Do you find it weird? Like I understand that from young ages, they had large platforms, but do you think that this is putting too much onto children to be role models when they themselves are like maturing and going through the world? Like they're supposed to be people that other kids look up to, but you're the same age as these other kids.
It's- yeah, 100%. I hate whenever, like when you're reading about something that Miley Cyrus did when she was literally 14. Like she was 13 years old when she started Hannah Montana. So all of those early scandals of hers were she was literally 15. And so when I read about that stuff, people are like, she's such a bad role model. I'm like, how can you be expected to be a role model at 15 years old?
Yeah.
Like even if you are like a great 15-year-old, like it's still a child. Like why aren't parents role models for their kids? Why is Miley Cyrus, like, I don't understand why. And I guess that's part of the parasocial relationship as well.
Something that I find interesting when I watch a lot of these kids or young adults or like teenagers who are influencers and things like that is specifically when I was watching the D'Amelio show, well, I didn't really watch it, like clips of it. They were talking about the impact of bullying onto Charlie. So I want to start off with saying, do you think that celebrity culture in general has changed? Because I know when we talked before, you said that influence and celebrities are like the same. And also when something like this, like cyberbullying to the point that your kid is like depressed, wanting to harm themselves, et cetera, why not take it away?
And this kind of reminds me of, I have been working on this MySpace Scene Kids video for so long. And that was a big part of, like, a lot of those Scene girls were like early influencers, but they just haven't had that longevity because there wasn't really any type of monetary, like, anything to that. Like, they just were really popular and didn't get paid from it. And a lot of those girls were like very viciously bullied. Like, MySpace, like that era of the internet, like late mid 2000s, was so vicious, and it was so evil. And you know, like, talking to them, and they'll be like, I don't know why I didn't get off. Like, I don't know, like, I felt like at that point, like, so many people hated me that the only people that liked me were also there. So it's like, I think it's, you know, kind of like a double-edged sword, where they get so much, you get that serotonin from seeing all the people being nice and even seeing people defend you. And, like, you know, so I think that's another reason why people go out looking for hate comments, like people who search their name in indirects on Twitter or search their name on Reddit or something, you know. Like, I feel like a part of that is wanting to see if people are defending you.
True. I don't search my name on anything.
Me neither.
I hate seeing mean comments. But one thing I do find that it kind of makes me less stressed out is when someone leaves a comment and you immediately see people dragging them. I'm like,
yes,
the job you're done.
Yes, I'm like, I didn't say anything.
Or like that clip from Multiverse of Madness, where it's like, sending those creatures after her was an act of, instead of myself, was an act of kindness. And someone captioned it says, big influencers when they set up their fans to attack. Lanes that celebrities have: music, actor, dancer, influencer, socialite, I guess you could say, is one. And like socialite slash you're an entrepreneur of something, you know, everybody has a business now. But something interesting is, why do you think that so many influencers would like go into music or acting or something like that? They go to this other realm of entertainment to kind of find legitimacy. Do you think that we're wrong to like devalue influencing as a status of celebrity?
I've been saying that you know, the kid star to pop star like pipeline has been a thing for a while, and I've been saying that, like, you know, we don't really have those traditional channels of bringing up a star, especially for pop music. Like, let's say, like, Addison Rae trying to break into pop music. Like, part of that is, I mean, I don't know if this is something everyone had. I know I certainly did. But I think a lot of young people, like, when you're a kid, you daydream about being, like, a star, you know, being a singer, you know, you put on little concerts for your parents or whatever. And I think that, you know, a lot of the influencers are really young. They're still in high school, or if not freshly out. So I think a lot of that is still just like a naivete, where it's like, I can do anything I want, so why the hell wouldn't I try it? Like, why? And you know, for that, I kind of respect them. Like, you know, there's a lot of people who want to be like, oh, they're taking away from the art, blah, blah, blah. But I just, like, I don't know. I feel like if you can, like, why not? Like, why not try it? Like, I mean, I would. If I had like a bunch of people around being like, do you want to record a song? I'd be like, fuck yeah, I want to record a song. Like, let's do it. But, you know, I think those traditional channels of coming up as a star are kind of dried out. Like, you know, no one really wants an artist with a development deal. I talk about this all the time. That's the new industry plants.
Can you define go into, like, what's the difference between a development plan and an industry plant?
I really don't think there is a difference, to be honest, because the term industry plant is something that comes from hip hop blogs in, I think, the late 2000s, early 2010s. Around the time when, you know, rap started to go mainstream and big corporations are buying into these things. And, you know, it was sort of a way of, like, gatekeeping something that, you know, is inherently a cultural art form, right? And they were being like, oh, because corporations are paying these random people to be like, oh yeah, I'm a rapper, like, I represent this city. And then people are like, no one knows you. Like, who are you? Like, I live in that city and no one's ever heard of you. And so that became a thing where they're like, these industry plants are just, like, you know, by the corporations being put into rap music to make, like, hits and disappear.
And we kind of still see that, but it's less of industries doing it, but more so people who want to be rap superstars, like Tekashi 6ix9ine, pretending to be associated with not necessarily cities, but gang activity, or aligning yourself with gang activity to create a more sense of authenticity. Or we see people who they're rapping about shit, and it's like, that's not actually real for you. And obviously, yes, they're,
yeah,
when it comes to rap and music in general, you can tell stories, you can be braggadocious, you can embellish and be hyperbolic. But I mean, some people, it's like, you're acting like you're in a fucking gang and you live in a, you grew up in a damn suburb.
Yeah.
Like, be serious. Like, or the idea of getting it out of the mud. This idea of like, and we see that in celebrity as well. Like, Britney Spears grew up poor. And I remember someone tweeted, it's like, how come y'all are mad Kim Kardashian told people to get their fucking asses up and work? But when Britney says, you better work, bitch, it's fine. Well, Britney Spears was her whole family's income. Yeah,
she's from Nowheresville, Mississippi. That's different.
And
I think that, like, the industry plant thing today, like I said, because those channels of music are so dried up, they're having to like reinvent the wheel with making an artist, because people have adopted this terminology from hip hop blogs and taken it into pop music, where, you know, I would argue that it doesn't belong, because the entire idea of a pop star is built on this idea of, like, you know, the star that just comes out. Like, maybe they work their way to the top, but they're already signed to a label, you know?
American Idol. Like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, they build their way up. And so they're having to reinvent the wheel. And then you get artists like someone like Claro, which had a big scandal with industry plant thing, because her dad is big up in some corporation and he knows these music execs. And I think people are trying to look into this because they think that they're going to be planting artists as up and coming acts, because they know the development deal doesn't work anymore. So now they're just, you know, trying to sneak them in and make it look like they're just a homegrown artist, because people love that. People love the success story of an underdog, or like a regular person like you and me, just making music in their room, and then they come up. People love that type of story. That's,
I think,
why we have X Factor, American Idol.
Change in the internet is like, I don't think we will ever get another person like Justin Bieber, who made music in his living room, and then the next, you know, he is like the shit for everybody who's a teenage girl and a little girl.
Because that,
and it's crazy.
That was like a, and that was very much a product of like that early big internet, like early YouTube thing, where everyone was going to YouTube to look for stuff. Like, Fred was on Nickelodeon, and John Cena was big into Fred. Like, he played his dad in that movie, and he was like, I really believe in this, like, because he was the most subscribed to person on YouTube, and he's like, this is going to be revolutionary for the youth culture, and like, what he's doing is incredible and revolutionary. And I think, like, something like with Usher seeing Justin Bieber making music and getting those fans on YouTube, it was that same type of thing, where it's like, this is revolutionary for the youth and like what they're into, like, I need to buy into this and make sure it gets big.
Well, speaking of Fred, haven't heard much about him, and that brings us to the next topic, is what happens when people start being irrelevant? We've seen celebrities who, like we were talking before, some people accept it and love it and can make their money but get a sense of more privacy. Mm-hmm. Other people want to cling on to the fame that they still have, and they go on to all these unwatched, you know, reality TV shows. But when we talk about YouTube, it's very interesting with the, you know, accusation of irrelevancy, because of how YouTube at different stages was such a cultural thing. Everyone can remember like oversaturated thumbnails, but like, what do you think about what happens when people on YouTube or influencers or people whose careers depend upon themselves and attention versus I act, I sing, like, like a talent or something like that.
Yeah.
What do you think about irrelevancy when you don't necessarily have a talent outside of your personality and your likability?
You know, I think every influencer that, you know, the lifestyle bloggers and the whatever it is, I think that they know that it's a finite situation. Like, I think that, you know, they are, and I think that's why we get so many of those creators upload every day, sometimes multiple times a day, because they know that they've got to get it before it's gone. And I think that's something that, you know, people weren't really aware of in early YouTube. Like, even creators like Glozell was huge. She like interviewed Obama and stuff. Like, she was everywhere.
Now she's poor.
Mm-hmm. And now she's going around doing these tours talking about how she mismanaged her money. She didn't know that YouTube was going to slip away from her like that. And I think that that's a situation that, you know, a lot of people are more cognizant of now. And that's why you get that super fast pace, always uploading.
Something I found interesting is I've been seeing a lot of videos pop up where someone's like, I failed at being an influencer and now I have to go get a second job. They just couldn't do it. And now they're talking about how annoying it is that they have to go and work. But when we look at influencers, do you think that YouTube specifically, when people are talking about, what was the phrase? Like, there was this phrase that people would assign to Emma Chamberlain and Hannah Meloche and that type of girl, relatable girl.
Yeah, like the quirky, relatable type.
Yes. Do you think that there exists two realms of the internet and fame when it comes to things like Y2K, like the Y2K era, and even in YouTube in this digital era and TikTok? Like, there seems to exist these two separate realms where there is mainstream and then there is not mainstream. And why do you think that that happens?
I think the internet has become so fragmented in the last 10 years, I guess. And like 10 years ago, we all knew Jenna Marbles. We all knew that Smosh was there. We all knew, like, we all knew the big chair, like Tayzon Day. Like, we all knew who was there and who was uploading stuff. We'd heard the names. But now I will stumble upon channels with 10 million subscribers. I've never heard of them once before in my life. And I don't think that I am like someone who lives under a rock and is just not very observant. Like, the internet is just a very, very fragmented place. And like, I'll talk about big creators to some of my friends that are my age and they've just never heard of them because it's just, the internet's so split up. When you're in your little niche and you carve out that little corner of the internet for yourself, it, you know, I think, one, it's like a safer way to be. I think for me, at least, it feels a lot more comforting to just know that the people that are there know what I'm doing and know what the vibe is. And then, you know, people like Emma Chamberlain, where they appeal to, I guess, more mass audiences. But I think also, I guess that's kind of like that niche became the big thing.
Yeah.
Which is another part of like, it's, you know, a ticking time bomb kind of, because that eventually, everyone knows.
Part of the conversation about influencing being dead is people saying, well, now everyone can be an influencer. So there's really no monetary gain to it, and that anybody can get the followers. It's not really about that. And people who have less followers can be more influential than those that have more. But someone brought up a point where it's like, in order for there to be celebrity, do you think there needs to be exclusivity?
Yes. 100%. Not everyone can be a celebrity, which is why I have been saying that influencing will die soon. Like, that type of influencing that's just, you know, the Instagram feeds, you look at it, they all pretty much look the same. It's like the beach pictures, the bikini pictures, the like the selfies, the like cute dinner.
That reminded me of, do you think that people who are more, someone posted a picture of celebrities when they post crying face emojis. Do you think that that is going to replace this? Like, Instagram is one of those apps where you have to look good. You can't come on there looking any type of way. You can't have a feed that looks any way. Like, it's very structured, very curated. And there's like this gaze that you feel versus TikTok. You post kind of whatever. People post kind of whatever.
Yeah.
But do you think that that's going to be replaced for people being like, I'm sad today, or I'm doing very mundane things, and that'll become a new form of influencing because it's more authentic, whatever that means. I did, like, imagine I said that in quotes.
Yeah, I think you're already starting to see that with people doing that make Instagram casual again, and the photo dumps with just like a random picture in it. You're seeing big influencers like, what's her name? Charlotte D'Alessio. I don't know if that name rings a bell with you, but she's a pretty big influencer. She was like big with the style, very much that same type of Instagram with bikini pictures, and she's very tan and skinny and like the cute outfits. And then now she's wearing like these weird kitschy clothes, and like, you know, she's wearing like these big moon boots to Coachella. And it's like, it's very much, I feel like people are starting to teeter into the like, and maybe I've seen some people say it's like a forced weirdness. And
yes!
Yeah, it's like, oh, a performative God, like strangeness that people
I've
do.
Been seeing that. I've been seeing that where you see some people and it's like, you don't look like you would dress like this naturally.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like when someone said, Doja Cat is so different than other celebrities because that's just her naturally versus everybody else. It's like overtly forced.
Yes.
But do you think that the way that we talk about celebrities is changing? Do you think they were more sympathetic to celebrities? Because they're like, how could the world treat Britney like this and Lindsay like this? And it's like, but do you think we're treating people like that now and not realizing it?
I think in a way, yes, I think people are more empathetic to like the rising star, but I think there's this thing with people where when someone's coming up, everyone wants to be there for the come up. Like everyone wants to be there as a star rises. Like you got to be there. Like, you know, I've had people that didn't really talk to me in high school, like reach out and be like, oh, congrats. And I'm like, and like, I, you know, you hear these type of stories from everyone, but then there comes a point where you get so popular that it becomes like polarizing. And so like we were talking about before, people have this need to humble people. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of, you know, I think it's kind of the same thing where, you know, some celebrities are, I don't want to say free of criticism, but they'll get, you know, just the light pat on the, you know, slap on the wrist type thing when they do something because, you know, they're still learning, they're still coming up. But then you have like more big established stars that will kind of indiscriminately just get hate, like no matter what they do or say, like, and it's strange. And I think that we don't think that it's the same as it used to be because people aren't reading tabloids as much, but they're still out there. People are still retweeting People magazine articles and Dumois is big and that's, all these blind items and stuff.
The next thing is, what do you think about Dumois? Because actually someone is alleging that they found out who it was.
Oh.
The women behind it, two women.
Ooh. See, I think in practice, like making something like Dumois, I've never understood why people would even risk it. Like if you've got some type of job where you are in this exclusive position.
They allegedly work in the fashion industry.
Like if you've got this exclusive job where you've got, you know, you're privy to all these secrets, I don't understand why you'd risk it just to let the common folk know. But, you know, as someone who I am guilty of consuming these things, you know, like maybe not Dumois, but I've read Crazy Days and Nights for videos, just trying to get a better picture of like who Lindsay Lohan was at the time. And like reading these big stories that were super huge about her that no one really knows if it's true or not. Like, you know, it's this very like interesting mystique around celebrity. And I think, you know, there's a market for it. It's kind of the same thing with People magazine. Cause like, you know, celebrities, if you ask them, they'll tell you everything in those magazines is made up. So I don't, you know, it's pretty much the same, but I think it does play into that, the parasocial relationship where people start to think they know these celebrities because they've got an eye on the inside or whatever.
Do you think that it's, when we look at Dumois and even before, like with drama channels on YouTube, something I find interesting is that a lot of YouTubers don't like them, but some of these YouTubers, when they get to a certain level, they'll be featured on E! News. And to me, from my point of view, I'm like, what the fuck is the difference? So do you think there is a difference between a drama channel and like E! News or?
I think the biggest difference is, the niche thing, like a drama channel on YouTube in a way is fairly niche because you kind of have to care about the overall environment of YouTube and like all of these big creators that you may not even really care about. But, you know, like when like Tati is having drama, like I've never watched a Tati Westbrook video in my life before that drama happened, but it was like just, you know, something with the environment of YouTube, which was something that I was into because I was just big into YouTube my whole life. And so, oh my God, there's a fly flying around me. That's so embarrassing. But there's like, you know, and I think that the difference is because I think that they kind of know that even though they're really big, they're probably not big enough to have small things brought up on E! News in the way that someone like Britney would. And in the way that a drama channel would bring up small things about them. You know, it's like they're a tiny fish in a big pond there, whereas they're a big fish in a small pond on a YouTube drama channel.
I mean, even when we look at things like Britney Spears and how it's like free Britney, but even when she does things that are normal, kind of going back to Instagram is when she posts like nude photos of her, she doesn't get the whole, she doesn't go out and purposely seek a glam team and a photographer to make it like an editorial. She's going to take a selfie and put some emojis over it. But we interpret that, which is something that average people do, as there's something wrong with Britney. This is
yeah, I think that's really interesting how acting outside of the norms on social media, which that is not the norm for like regular living, right? You don't like, if I wanted to take a nude, I'm not calling over a glam squad and like hair and, you know, getting like a photo shoot backdrop put up. Like, I'm just going to take one, right? And I think it's really crazy that when someone like Britney breaks these like social norms within social media, because we're used to seeing influencers like Kim or Kylie or whoever, and when they do something completely normal, people are like, she's unwell.
Yes.
And it's bizarre. Or,
there's something interesting when we were talking last time about celebrities and accounts like Problematic Fame, which, if anyone doesn't know, Problematic Fame is an Instagram account among a plethora of others that purposely will take pictures of celebrities when they were children, when they are on a red carpet like a Getty image, or when they are out and about, and compare it to pictures that the celebrity posted themselves to show that in their mind they're saying, you know, just wanting to let everyone know that, you know, everyone's natural and you know, don't feel insecure. And
Instagram isn't real.
Yeah, it's like, obviously, yes, girls do feel there is an impact of body image when we look at photoshopping and things like that. But I just, do you feel like that goes too far and that we do hold celebrities to standards we wouldn't a natural person or normal person?
Yeah, and I think the logic doesn't really track. I think because, you know, yeah, Bella Hadid is absolutely gorgeous and stunning in photos. And maybe you can find this weird candid photo of her where she doesn't look exactly like that, right? But I,
you're cutting off, I don't know why.
So I don't know why, like, knowing that someone edits their photos is going to comfort me, because I see beautiful people all over, so, and they're not editing in real life, I just see them.
Okay, true. I think it's definitely weird where I understand maybe feeling uncomfortable when a celebrity that may be pushing those tees or those shakes that don't work, mm-hmm. or their waist trainers that don't work, and actively profiting off of diet culture, which has detrimental impacts on girls. But I think when it's normal people who talk about how they're feeling, it's, we feel this sense of like entitlement over even their bodies and criticize people for not adhering to those beauty standards while also criticizing them for feeling like shit under them as well, mm-hmm. and then doing something about it. While yes, I think some of y'all are weird where y'all go and do those, like, do this massage on your nose and it can get smaller. And it's like, that's, it's cartilage and bone. That's not gonna, how it works. And then always excusing of, well, what's wrong with changing something? It's like, no, we should really talk about it, these beauty standards. But it's like, celebrities are also people too. And they are way more scrutinized and always have a camera on them than everybody else. So maybe we should be a little bit more sympathetic to that. And then
I think a really interesting,
you can go. Way too damn much.
Okay. Oh no, it's fine. I mean, I feel like I do that too. I think an interesting example of this is Dove Cameron. I see a lot of people post her Instagram pictures. I think what the thing is with her, if I'm not mistaken, is that, you know, she doesn't have like the surgeries or whatever, or maybe she does, but her photos are mostly just like super, super edited. And she still looks like herself, you know, gorgeous. She's beautiful in person. But in the Instagram photos she uploads, she doesn't look like how, I guess, she may look on camera at like an award show or something. And I don't know. I find it really interesting that people, because it's like, why do you think she's editing her pictures?
Yeah.
And then people are going to point it out and go, oh my God, we like clocked your edits. Like, now what? And I'm like, yeah, now what? what do you want from her? Like, you obviously know she's insecure if you're aware that she's editing your photos. So it's like, what do you want her to say or do? Just like turn it off? That's not, you know, made it worse.
I don't know. I don't, it's really weird when we think about what people expect celebrities to do, because before everyone expected celebrities to do was act, sing, dance, mm-hmm. go home. Who gives a fuck about your life? But I watched, cannot remember the person's, YouTube page, but they were essentially making a video about Marilyn Monroe's last movie. And I watched it, absolutely loved it, and how the media can spin things to make it seem like it's her fault when it's actually not her fault. My door moved. And also with like things with Britney and how she was getting gaslit under her conservatorship. But do you think that, oh my God, I forgot the question.
It's okay.
Oh my God, I forgot the question. Now I'm trying to think. Okay, I'll just cut this part out.
Yeah, it's fine.
When we look about celebrities and this curated image of celebrities and how you, to be a celebrity, there has to be some form of curation. Do you think that people try to curate relatability?
100%. I think, you know, for a while that kind of fell out because the type of relatability that we have was like a Cara Delevingne type, right? And I think it's interesting the way people talk about her now, because I think she's really a product of that relatable, like, I just eat pizza and lay in bed, like, who cares, like, I don't want abs, I want pizza. Like, she's, I think she's very reminiscent of that time, especially like her sense of humor and just like the making weird faces and type thing, because, you know, she was, you know, she's a model but she makes ugly faces, like, it's so silly. And, you know, the Jennifer Lawrence, is that her name? Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence types with the she falls down all the time, and that's so relatable. And I think that that fell out of, you know, that was not so in vogue for a while when we had the Kylie Jenner types, you know, being very perfectly polished, very like chic all the time. And I think now it's back in a way, but it has to be so highly curated, because you don't want to get called, like, you know, the worst thing you can be right now is like the quirky, like, you know, you don't want to be like the she's so crazy, like with the pizza rolls on her head picture. You don't want to be that person, but you also don't want to be like super stuck up and like stiff and boring. So it's, you know, it's, I think it's a weird position that the celebrities are put in to like be really relatable without it being forced. But it's like, you know, all you could really do is be yourself, but sometimes that's not enough.
Yeah, when we look at celebrities like Julia Fox and how she, very obvious where people like toy with people and plays with the press and knows that she's pissing people off and loves it. Why do you think people don't like when people are in on jokes like the Uncut Gems situation?
I think that's a part of the, I guess it's relatable only for celebrities, you know? It's like, it's relatable to them, but it's like, it's not to us, because it's kind of a thing where it's like, we were laughing at you. That's what everyone wants to be like, oh no, we were laughing at you, not with you. But then there's some people who are like, oh, I like that she can joke and like be in on the joke and whatever. But I think a large part of the consensus was like annoyed with the fact that she was playing in on it. And I think, you know, like the thing with Queen Naija on Twitter where like, people, where she was like, oh, it's a big joke and I'm in on it. And everyone was like, no, you're not in on the joke. And I was just like, oh my God.
We're so mean to her. Oh. Well, the reason that we didn't record the last Zoom was because of her. It was her fault.
Actually, she cut the wires.
Yes. When we look at celebrities, do you think that there is this newfound, like, speaking of relatability, like, I feel like a lot of important conversations related to like social change and justice have happened in the conversation, and celebrities obviously are aware of that, some of them. Do you think that that also plays into this curated sense of relatability, is that they feel this need to be activist? Because like damn near every celebrity now is an activist, and it makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I think part of that comes from, and I think, you know, the relatability thing is also just wanting to please your audience and wanting to be what they want, which is, especially for influencers, that's pretty much the whole job, is not only to influence and get people to buy stuff, but to be what people like, and not really to find people that like you, but to become what people like. And I think that that kind of comes from where, you know, you've got this audience of, because there's a big trend with teenagers feel the need to be these performative activists too, right? So I think you've got this audience of performative activist teenagers that are like, oh, say something about blah, blah, blah. And it's like, what do you want them to say? Like, go to someone who has authority or like, you know, speaks with conviction on this matter, someone who like actually knows what they're talking about. Like, but they want them to say, just so it's like, you just have this like piece of tangible evidence that like they're one of the good guys.
Yes.
And I think that's another part of the parasocial relationship where you want to make sure that everyone you like is like this perfect person. And that's never going to happen. It's like, when I listen to music, I never look into any artist. I'm like, I don't want to know.
I think another thing is like, when we look at like, oh, how do we hold celebrities accountable when they do really fucked up things? Is another interesting question. And part of this is, even though I think it's disputed, the idea of celebrities going to Black Lives Matter protests to get a photo op, like, what do you do after someone does that? You just sit there and it's like, girl, cringy, yeah. Goodbye. Like,
yeah. And I think the idea of holding celebrities accountable, and then, you know, the Tumblr joke of canceling people, which like, you know, just like even the verbiage of like canceling someone is like so obviously rooted in like this joke that people were making, that like, I guess then people like started to take it seriously, and some people still weren't taking it that seriously. But then like news outlets started to run with it as like, yeah, this, you know, movement on the internet that young people are doing where they're canceling people. And so I think a lot of that also comes from like the fear of being canceled, which, yeah, is a very, very strange way to move on the internet.
When people look at cancel culture, they genuinely phrase it as if your career is going to be over, but that very rarely happens. Majority of the time,
yeah, it's just you, people just drag you on Twitter
for a day or two, and then everybody moves the fuck on, you know.
Yeah, just, maybe your name will get brought up in a few months and people will make fun of you again, but like, that's it.
Yeah, and I think this kind of reminds me of one creator that started, she was a comedian, and then she ended up doing Instagram things during pandemic season one, and then eventually she now has a Showtime show, Z-Way.
Oh yes.
What do you think about how she interviews celebrities and that?
I think you know, she's stepped out of her niche and now gone into something that's more mainstream popular. So just, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, just like naturally, not everyone's gonna get it.
Yeah. Right.
And so you see like conservatives commenting on her stuff and being like, oh, this show is so racist. And it's like, you know, like that's kind of like turning that type of thing on its head is like the entire point. Like that is like, that's the entire joke of the show. And it's, and so, and then you also see people who are getting mad that she's giving a platform to people like Chet Hanks.
I think
that just comes with the territory of being someone who interviews these really problematic people, so that you can kind of like, I guess, like underhanded dunk on them, but most of the time they're kind of ignorant, so they don't even realize that they're getting made fun of.
Or I mean, like when she asked Dumont, like, do you have any Black friends? And I'm like, no, you're my only Black friend. It's like, ooh, you sit there and you think, mm-hmm, like, what, just lie, why would you not lie?
I feel like some people are, I wonder sometimes why some celebrities go on that show, like why they feel so confident in their ability to like hold up there. Like Charlamagne, I watched her interview with Charlamagne, and like she had him sitting there like actually being pensive, I guess, for a second. Like she was like, she's like, do you hate Black women? He's like,
let me think. Like,
why would he even think to come? Like, I don't understand. Maybe that comes from the thing with like, they're trying to be more, not relatable, but they're trying to like show people that they're like this real person and they can like be in on it type thing. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it just does not succeed.
So we talked a lot about how the internet is not changing as much. What do you think the next revolutionary thing will be? Okay, well, let me go back. When we talked about the internet changing and things like that, we also saw like some things change, some things stay the same, but they more so just change format. Instead of tabloids, we have Dumont. Instead of, you know, necessarily watching TMZ all the time, even though it's still around, we have drama channels. Do you think that instead of someone like Perez Hilton, who will definitively give their opinion and be crude, that things like Dumas or things like that, where people will not necessarily say their own opinion, but leave it very blank in the comments to fill in those cracks. Do you think that will just have the same amount of impact, aka harm?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gives the illusion of, I think that's something I said last time, was like, it gives this illusion of choice to the people reading it, so they don't feel like they're contributing to something actively harmful, even if someone is like, doesn't agree with consensus in the comments that, you know, whatever person is a monster or a horrible person or a diva or whatever, even if they don't agree with it, you know, you have this feeling that like, oh, well, I mean, I'm reading this unbiased source, you know, it's just an account of someone who, you know, interacted with this person, so it kind of, you're able to wipe your hands clean of the type of shame that has been given to people who consumed like People Magazine, Us Weekly, etc.
What do you think is going to be the next thing to revolutionize the internet, the idea of being a celebrity the way that YouTube did? Like, what is next? I mean, I feel like TikTok is definitely influencing the music industry, but what do you think is next?
You know, I'm not sure. I've tweeted, like, I have like 7 threads on Twitter about this, pretty much this exact thing, where I'm like, I know that a big shift is coming, right? Like it's kind of obvious, I feel like the influencer is like on a downward trend. Cable television is suffering right now. Like, award shows are suffering. Traditional celebrities are having trouble being seen over like someone like on an influencer. You know, the music industry is kind of in shambles because no one really knows how to get people's attention, and there's not really like a science to it anymore, whereas we used to have the radio and stuff to just like get music out there. Now it's like you can't really force people to listen to anything anymore. And I don't know like what the next big thing is, but like I know something is coming, and I know it's going to be soon, because like there's new sounds in music right now. Like, people are turning toward like live performances. Everyone does rock performances live, and I don't think that's a coincidence. I think people are trying to turn, and I, you know, this is something that you'll always notice. Rock has their comeback after something traumatic happens in the country. Like post 9/11, we had the big emo trend, and I think post pandemic, we're probably like, maybe not the same type of emo that we had then, but I think something, you know, people are going to turn to those more grungy things. That's why we have artists like Doja Cat and Miley Cyrus both like dabbling in those type of things. Willow Smith, He Who Shall Not Be Named is quite popular. And
please tell me it is not Megan's husband to be.
Unfortunately, I mean, I hate him, and I'm pretty sure most people who like enjoy rock music hate him, but you know, I can't deny that you know, he has had a hand in making people think of pop punk in the last few years, especially with artists like Willow and like Youngblood or whoever. And I think that this shift, I don't know what it's going to be, but I think it's going to be something that is going to be more for like the relatability type thing. It's going to be more about like a homegrown artist. And I think following that, even farther into the future, we're going to finally see the return of like a super polished pop star. But I think we have to go through the phase of the homegrown artist first.
Things that I find interesting is how people were talking about the influence of the pandemic onto celebrity things, and how anybody can be one. People just started making videos when we're all alone and all at home, and then they blew up, like Tinks, Dumas, other people. What do you think? Damn, what was my question? Do you think that like, when we look at things coming back, oh my God, I always forget my questions.
You got it. I believe in you.
Let me think. Do you think that the cycle of relevancy is becoming shorter?
Yes. I think it's weird. I was thinking about this the other day. I also think that it's like your life cycle, as far as, I guess, coming up, I think it's shortened. Like Gwen Stefani, no doubt, did not get popular until she was 27. Like, that's like Don't Speak, Spiderwebs, like those very early Gwen Stefani songs. So by the time she was solo, she was over 30 already. Yeah. Madonna had so many hits when she was into her 40s. And I think it's really interesting because you don't see celebrities churning out hits.
I know. Like, over when we look at it, how Katy Perry, you cannot deny that that one album, Teenage Dream, best pop album this century.
Yes.
And for a lot of pop stars now, from that early time, it's really hard to get those number ones again, to get that on the charts again. And this is my question, is the change in his music, someone said it's becoming sad. We want sad music everyone can relate to. But then people also theorizing that after we come out of a pandemic, after bad things happen, there's this influx of happy music.
And why I think that's Kobe, kind of
Calais got so popular, Natasha Bedingfield, but then those things didn't last super long.
Yeah. I think that's part of with TikTok, because not only with their algorithm where it's like you click on a sound one time and now every video on your feed is that sound or like a variation of that sound, like a remix or something, but also the fact that you watch a video and like it'll play like 8 times when you watch a video once. So like already just hearing it one time, you've heard the chorus 8 times. So it's like everything's going to get worn out so much faster just in this format. Like and I think that's also probably why music lasted longer in the days of like TRL or 106 and Park. You wait and the song comes on, you hear it, and you might not hear it again until tomorrow.
Do you think that's driving people to make more content and overexhausting people to like burnout?
Yeah, and I think that's also, I don't know how exactly it would connect, but I think it also has something to do with like where people complain about not getting enough music from an artist. Whereas this is kind of, it's not abnormal to not get an album from an artist every year. That's not abnormal at all. But Ariana Grande takes like 2 minutes off from after she's been dropping nonstop albums and like music videos and touring everything. And she finally takes a break and people are like, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? And I think we've become so accustomed to like people just being like, all right, well, that song's over. Now I got to put something else out. And it's very strange. And I think about like one single from an album used to last like a year and a half. And now it's like a few months.
And people are also talking about with movies, is one thing we don't talk about with like early 2000s is the movies. A lot of remakes of Shakespeare, of classics into modern takes, like 10 Things I Hate About You is Shakespeare's To Tame a Shrew. I love that movie. Clueless is
Emma. That's Emma. Jane Austen, yeah.
And then there's another one. I cannot think of it right now.
I know exactly. It's damn it. I did a video.
Amanda Bynes one where she's the man.
Yes. Pygmalion.
Yes. Yes.
I knew it was in one of my videos.
What do you think happened to like teen movies? Well, one, the rom-com like genre died, it feels like.
I think it's really interesting looking at like the landscape of movies and how it's changed, because I think about that all the time. Like, I feel like maybe not millennials. I mean, I don't know. Would you consider like the Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, like that group of people? I don't know if I would consider them more like for Gen X or for millennials, but I feel like they both got to enjoy having that, like, you know, troupe of comedians that was going to like put out a good movie. Like, you knew like a Judd Apatow movie in like the late 2000s, like you knew it was going to be a funny movie. You're going to go to the movies, you're going to giggle. And I feel like now we don't have like those comedy actors. I mean, we still have them, but like, it's still the same people.
There's nobody new.
Like, we don't have like those new comedy actors, those new directors. Like, there's nothing, I don't know what it is. And I don't know if it's just like people not being given the chance. Cause like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't think there's any funny millennials or Gen Z people that could make a movie. Like, there obviously are. Like, I saw that movie Good Boys. That movie was really good with those little kids. That was really funny. That's probably one of the best comedies I've seen recently.
Or even things that aren't comedies, like Greta Gerwig, every movie she makes, even though sometimes you watch the movies and you think, damn, what the fuck even happened to this? it's its own genre, and it's so nice.
I really do appreciate A24 and what they've been. I feel like for Gen Z, as like a studio that puts out movies that are consistently liked, where they do have some flops, but like most of the time their movies geared towards teens are pretty successful.
Yes. And when we look at it, it's like now it seems with movies, they're very, I don't know. There are some that are definitely trying to keep formula and other ones that aren't, But it's like you said, where there are no, oh, my mom's calling. One sec.
Yeah, I'll wait.
With movies, people said that we may be getting satirical dark comedies. I love a good dark comedy. 2000s mm-hmm. dark comedies. Drop Dead Gorgeous. Love that yes. film.
But I'm a cheerleader. I don't know if that's a 90s or 2000s. That's a good
yes, movie. It's so amazing. Like, I don't even know if you could really describe movies from this era because they seem so all over the place.
It felt so abundant. Like, it felt like, and I guess, you know, part of that is also the pandemic slowing down production and, you know, people not, you know, wanting to make a movie in case it'll flop because no one wants to go to theaters. But
yeah,
I think, and I hate the notion, well, I mean, I guess I agree to some extent that every movie today that's made is like a remake of something.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that makes it inherently bad. I just think they're remaking the wrong things. Yeah. I think there's plenty of movies from like the 60s or the 50s that are good movies, but no one's going to watch them because it's shit quality.
When we look at movies, people are banking in on movies that were classics.
Like the he's all that, the gender bend, she's all that. Like, we didn't need that. Like, we remember, like, it's still great quality. We can watch it in like 4K on Netflix. Like, it's perfectly fine.
They should remake bad movies and make them good.
Yeah, I think remake movies that flopped but had a good like premise behind it. Remake, you know, stuff like something like Valley of the Dolls, I think could be really successful right now. Like, that could be huge right now. Oh, they are? Oh, thank God. I've been saying this for so long.
Dakota Johnson? And I want to say Anne Hathaway, but let me look it up actually.
I love that.
Because
yeah, they could be like cousins. They look kind of similar.
And also another thing is a lot of book to movie adaptations, I feel like happen way faster. Like Sally Rooney, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's because she's international and is from Ireland. But she releases a book and within a year or two it comes out later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, you find a lot of disappointment within like book adaptations to movies because people love to say like the book was so much better than the movie because like obviously whatever you're building in your imagination is probably going to look better than a set that's built by man.
These Valley of the Dolls I think should be remade.
Or like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, like remaking something like that. It's an 80s movie. It was super, super popular, but it's very, very quintessentially 80s. They're like parodies of people that don't exist anymore. You know, like greasers, like we don't have, you know, your local school group of greasers that show up in their cars and their leather jackets. Like that's not something that exists. And, you know, the characters that they're parodying, like the girl who dresses up like Joan Jett, that's not someone who exists at a high school anymore. It's like they could make a modern version of that, that, you know, if they don't, I think if it has the right director and they don't do too much of that, like that new A24 movie, oh my God, it's called Bodies, 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 and the like, this is not a safe space, like keep whoever wrote that movie out of the writer's room. But I feel like
forced.
Something like that could be yes, I think something like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, because I wonder, like it seems very stereotypically 80s, but that movie was loved by high schoolers when it came out, so somewhere along the way, and like Mean Girls has very 2000 stuff in it, but people loved it, so I just like, where do they lose the plot or what teenagers like?
Now it feels like whenever people bring up people in Gen Z specifically, it feels like they're intentionally trying to make fun of us in a way that isn't funny.
Yeah.
So then people look at it, it's like, well, fuck you, old man. I'm not gonna watch
exactly. And there's plenty of valid ways you could make fun of young people, like make fun of shifting TikTok. Like that would be funny. Like you don't have to make fun of someone saying like I need a safe space, because that's a real thing. Like it's not that funny.
I think with things like And Just Like That, or people complain about these reboots becoming woke, mm-hmm. is it just like, is it woke or do you just enjoy area where you can just say really fucked up things about people and it's fine? But another thing is, I think in these shows there needs to be people of that age in the room. With mm-hmm. Skims, not the US version, the UK version, they had teenagers in their writing it, so it didn't feel forced. It didn't feel, oh my God, it's just weird. Like
and even like with Mean Girls, I don't remember what it specifically was. I think it was the Uggs or something. Like Lindsay Lohan would fight for specific things to be included in the movie. She was like, oh, teens are gonna like this. And Tina Fey would go, okay, like I trust you because you're a teen. And like, and Lindsay Lohan was the it teen. So it's like obviously she knows. Like
maybe there's just devaluing of us as a generation where they don't think we may be insightful. But I think with Judd Apatow and him watching The Bubble, that was really funny when they did have, well, it was his daughter, but his daughter is playing this girl from the Midwest who's this huge TikTok star. And one thing I found interesting is where it's like a mockumentary of them making a show during the pandemic, a movie during the pandemic. And the girl, she's like, I can't talk to you without my mom's permission. Is this like, that's funny.
Yeah.
Because that's actually how these kids are when she's talking about, she's like, I live in the middle of nowhere, but I have all these followers now. Like, that stuff's funny.
Another thing with like, when I'm talking about like in my parody movie video is like a movie like the Wayans Brothers, Don't Be a Menace to South Central, like that movie. And compared to something like Vampires Suck. Don't Be a Menace was obviously made out of a place of like love for those movies. You know, it was made with like the intention to pay homage, but still like, you know, like goof on some of the things that are just like funny tropes that are used in all those movies. But something like Vampires Suck is just made to go like, oh, look how stupid this thing is. And it's like, that's only funny to a certain point. Like after an hour and a half, it is not funny anymore.
I think something interesting is like viewing things that used to be funny. Like these parody movies is, I remember there was one where it's making fun of 300, and I tried to rewatch that movie and I was like, this is so fucking unfunny.
I didn't watch Epic Movie or Date Movie when I was a kid, but I did watch Meet the Spartans, which is that one that parodies 300, and Disaster Movie. And for some reason I loved those movies, specifically Disaster Movie. But when you go and look at the ratings for like all of the Aaron Seltzer and Jason Friedberg movies, those are the lowest rated ones. And like, I don't know. And I mean I knew 300 existed, right? Like the This Is Sparta clip, but like I never watched that movie. I don't know why I liked Meet the Spartans so much. And I think that a lot of the comedy in those movies was just being able to look and go, oh, I know that reference, that's funny. Yeah, that's like half of what the jokes are, and it's not funny.
Last questions. What would you say your favorite part of Y2K would be? Beginning, middle, or end?
I guess that mid to late area, like 2007, 2008. Now you're going to have to hear me out, because media at that time, I feel like, was particularly the worst. But I also think like out of the concrete grew a rose with like fashion and aesthetics and stuff. And I feel like around that time, things just, I don't know, people were just getting very creative. But I don't know what, you know, really caused it. I know it was like the 80s comeback towards the 2010s. It's like early Nicki Minaj and like early Lady Gaga and like those just wild and out of the box aesthetics.
Back when like, Lady Gaga was weird.
Yes, like be weird again, like wear a dress made of meat. Like I live for that. Like that is everything. Like I don't know. And I don't want to be like one of those people that's like, oh, people just don't try hard in pop culture anymore. But it's like, I don't know, something like those. Like those two in particular, like very early in their careers, like very clearly like hungry and like trying to come up. Like I love it. And they were going so hard and being so creative. And it's just, I think it's so perfectly late 2000s.
Who do you think has had the largest impact in the early 2000s era?
Ooh, that's a really good question. We'll
do music, film, and then just kind of like fashion.
Okay. Music, I'm going to say, ooh, that's so hard. Music, I'd either say, I keep thinking of 2010s people. Music, I guess I'd say like a Britney Spears or, you know, early Beyonce, because they would, you'd see them do something really new and innovative on an album, and then that becomes the new hot thing. Like Beyonce does a track using, or Beyonce and Britney Spears do like Bhangra influenced tracks, and that everyone's doing Bhangra inspired tracks, and like there's just like cultural appropriation everywhere.
Britney's album, which one was it? It's the one where she had brunette hair. People hated it, but then it became the standard.
Blackout was like hated in the nation. No one, like everyone was talking about how it was garbage produced and it sounded horrible. And people go back and look at it and they're like, this is the definition of like late 2000s pop. And you go back and you can track like how she influenced all of these trends that came afterwards in pop music.
Yes. And then movies?
You know, unfortunately, I guess I'd have to say someone like Judd Apatow. Like, I think that that type of comedy, and, you know, I think the problem with that is that it's very specific to like him and his friend group. And, you know, they're all people who, I don't know how long they've known each other. I'm assuming most of their lives, you know, because they were all doing stuff when they were young, like Freaks and Geeks and stuff. And I think it's a very specific type of humor to their friend group that for some reason just everyone really took a liking to, and everyone just became very like, you know, everyone just felt like this was people that they knew. You see them in every movie. They're always together in the movies.
Or Adam Sandler, his whole friend group.
Like exactly. Like a friend group of men making some movies. Like, it just was a very influential moment in the early 2000s. We need to
bring that back. No more male podcast.
Yes, men, get together and make a comedy movie, please.
What do you think is your favorite celebrity memoir?
Ooh, I actually have one right behind me right now. The Meaning of Mariah Carey. Great book. Oh, also another one, Holly Madison, Down the Rabbit Hole. This book is so good. It's about her experience with living Playboy. With Hugh Hefner and being one of his girlfriends. And she kind of like sets the record straight for all of the different like drug parties and stuff that you'd hear about, and like the, I don't know if I can curse on here, but orgies that they would have and stuff.
This was like great. We talked about pop culture, Y2K. This was like super nice. And I like that we kind of talked about different things than we did the first time, because I didn't want it to be like super repetitive. So like, if you want to give any like outro or anything like that, or where people can find you.
I want to say thank you to you for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to hearing it and reading the other stuff you've been posting. And if you want to find me, I'm on YouTube at Mila Tequila. I'm also Mila Tequila 2, T-O-O. That channel is a bit neglected, but I'll be back soon, hopefully. And then on Twitter, I'm Mila Tequila YT, as in YouTube. And then on Instagram, I am Mila TEQUI.LA. So it's tequila, but with the LA separated with a period.